This meeting of the House Resources Committee will now come to order. It is now 1:03 p.m. Wednesday, April 23, 2025, in Capitol Room 124. Members present are Representative Colom, Representative Hall, Representative Mears, Representative Elam, Representative Sadler, Co-Chair Representative Dibert, and myself, Co-Chair Representative Burke. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Please take this time to silence your cell phones for the duration of the meeting. I'd like to thank Andrew Magnuson from Records and Zachary Lawhorn from the Juno LIO for staffing the committee today. On today's agenda, we'll continue the committee conversation with the Alaska Gasline Development Corporation from our April 9 meeting. We have in the room Mr. Frank Richards, president of the Alaska Gasline Development Corporation, and AGDC board chair Warren Christian.
He will be coming in.
Okay. Okay. Well, we have Mr. Richards here. Welcome to House Resources. Thank you for being here. Please come to the table. And if you have any opening statements to.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Frank Richards. I'm the president of the Alaska Gasline Development Corporation, and I have accompanying me here today Matt Kissinger, and I'll let him introduce himself.
Yeah, for the record, Matt Kissinger from Anchorage, Alaska, Venture Development Manager for AGDC.
So, Madam Chair, again, as we discussed with the committee a couple weeks ago, we went through our presentation. Today we are having discussions in the building with various members individually, but then we're also in front of the legislative budget this evening. So we have what is known as our executive committee of our board of directors. So our board chair, Warren Christian, our vice chair, Janet Weiss, and our secretary treasurer, Mike Chenault, are in the building, and they will likely be coming in later in the meeting, again, because they were double booked with other meetings. But again, if there's opportunity, we'll bring them to the table for any statements that they want to make. But we are here today to be able to address any questions that the committee may have after consideration of our discussion last week or 2 weeks ago.
Thank you so much, and thank you again for joining us back in House Resources. I know when we left, we didn't have much time. The presentation kind of took a bit, and there were lots of questions left over. So I know that some of those lingering questions, it's been quite a while since we had that meeting. But
one point I would add, Madam Chair, is that, again, we took away from the conversations that we had a couple weeks ago and put together what we call the Alaska LNG fact sheet that we, I believe, has been shared with members as well as Alaska LNG question and answers, or Q&As. This came out of a conversation with Co-Chair Dibert as potentially a useful tool to be able to have conversations with constituents about what is this project, where are we, how's it going forward. So hopefully that's been helpful. And again, we can make that available if committee members do not have that.
Thank you. So with that, I saw Representative Sadler. We'll go straight into questions.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, it's been a little while, and I please ask for indulgence as some of my questions have already been answered. But welcome, Mr. Richards, Mr. Kissinger. I wonder if you could – I did go up and listen to the LBNA committee meeting after you presented to House Resources, and there was some discussion about the expense for feed for the different elements of the pipeline. Could you help delineate for me and for the public just what the cost is for each of the different sub-projects? And how the ADA funding proposal may or may not fit into those funding. So I'm going to open up the topic, Mr. Kissinger, probably on the financing and what the cost for feed is and who would be responsible for those.
Yeah, thank you, through the chair, Representative Sadler. So it's actually roughly $50 million per element of the project. So per sub project, you have the gas treatment plant on the North Slope, you have the pipeline, and then you have the liquefaction in Nikiski. Each one of those around $50 million. That is what we can that's our estimate, first of all. The agreement that we have with Glenfarne is that they will spend whatever it takes to get to FID, but that's our estimate of pre-FID spending. A big chunk of that is FEED, which is the front-end engineering design work. That's the additional engineering that's needed to get to a Class 2 or Class 3 cost estimate, which is sufficient to take a final investment decision. But also there are all funds in there that we had anticipated for lining things up like the financing. So it's more than just the FEED. It's everything that you'd spend before having a final investment decision.
And if I may, on the second part of that question, you asked about how does the ADA backstop fit into that. Well, I'm here to identify that Glen Farm has made the decision to suspend discussions about the ADA backstop. So they came into this project before the backstop, considering this project before the backstop is in place, and they made the decision to be able to move the pipeline forward through a de-risking engineering process and are willing to do so with private capital. So that discussion, again, can now move off the table.
Good to know. Thank you. So much to follow up on. Thank you for that news tidbit here. What was the follow-up going to be? You commented that Glen Farm will spend whatever it takes to get to FEED on the pipeline portion. That's the initial phase one. Is the decision all or nothing? Are they going to keep spending until they either make a decision or not? Or is there some departure point, some off-ramps in the process that might cause our agreement to terminate before the FID decision? FID, because it's redundant.
Yeah, Representative Sadler through the chair. Certainly, just to clarify for everyone, between FID and FEED, so that people
like
listening. So FEED is front-end engineering and design, and that's what we have milestones for, in ensuring that the project goes through that front-end engineering design, because that's the bulk of what needs to take place before we can have a final investment decision. As far as the commitment to take it to an FID, a FID, that is a lasting commitment. So they would have to negotiate their way out of that commitment. And along with that comes the requirement to make diligent development efforts, which is a long definition for, but it includes things like maintaining the permits, continuing to spend to progress the project, et cetera. So it's sort of, because it's such a big project, it's hard to know when you're going to meet an FID. You have to line up all that funding. But it keeps them on the hook for making those efforts until that happens.
Follow up, Representative Sadler.
Goodness, boy, and to ask about that. Yeah, could you outline the different elements? My understanding, some people might think that the final investment decision, FID, is the one step along a process, and please clarify that. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the FID has to involve the financing, construction, engineering, plans, permitting, just all the different things you have to get together. That's the one get in a room, everyone signs the paper kind of thing, everyone commits. Is that what FID is, or is there some other step past that?
Representative Sadler through the chair. So that's exactly right. FID, or FID, as I call it, is the end all and be all of the project, to be honest. That's the point in time when you say that you're going to build the project and everyone actually puts their commitment forward, mm-hmm. not just verbally, but they provide the funds and proof of funds in order to move the project forward. Yeah. We have a graph up, chart up here, slide up, thank you, chart kind of showing all the elements that go into FID. And I like to talk about this working our way clockwise from the 12 o'clock position. So you have your operator and management agreements. This is really what we've already brought in Glen Farm to do. So these are now in place. Your North Slope gas purchase agreements. So we have the GSPA with Great Bear Pantheon. We're working GSPAs with the other producers. And those are moving along nicely with all the producers engaging positively and in good faith. Gas offtake agreements, again, and LNG sales and purchase agreements. So these are the agreements on the other end of the pipeline. The gas offtake agreements refer to those in-state, and LNG sales and purchase agreements obviously refer to exports overseas. And along with that, potential credit support. So like we have this access to federal loan guarantees, and that would provide extra support, which really allows you to do what's called project finance. I can talk about that. You need your permits, which we have. You need your Class 2 to 3 cost estimate, which you get from FEED. And then you need your EPC contracts to construct the pipeline. Those are also sort of an outcome of FEED. Having all those things in place then allows you to go and get the debt financing. The debt financing obviously relies heavily on these agreements and the creditworthiness of these agreements. And that's the difference between project finance and sponsor finance. So when the producers were looking at this, I think there was a focus on sponsor finance. This is where it's on the balance sheet of the investors in the project. Starting around early 2010s, and project finance has been around longer than that, but starting in the 2010s, all the LNG projects in the lower 48 were fundamentally built using this project finance, and that is really where the debt doesn't have recourse to the sponsor because the creditworthiness of the entity because of those contracts is sufficient to provide the debt. Once all that's in place, then the equity sponsors sit around a room, just like you said, and it's usually done in a single meeting, vote yes, and with all affirmative votes, then you move forward.
Thank you.
Don't want to monopolize, so I'll defer.
Thank you. Just want to let the record reflect that Representative Fields joined us at 1:09 p.m. We also have in the audience former Speaker Mike Chenault. And I will ask that when the two present, or when you speak, please introduce identify themselves. Yourself for the record. And with that, Representative Fields.
Thank you. Through the chair, I'm looking at this Alaska LNG fact sheet. Is that when was that produced by AGDC? Is that a document produced today?
Through the chair, Representative Fields, Frank Richards. Again, this fact sheet, we produced it after discussions really with Representative Dibert when we were here 2 weeks ago.
Could I ask a couple of follow-ups? Because and I ask about that because I think there is some new information here, and I just wanted to get a little more detail. So the fact sheet says Glen Farne will bear 100% of development risk and costs, estimated $150 million to reach FID. So does that mean that ADA is no longer backstopping $50 million or is no longer committed to backstopping $50 million?
Through the chair, Representative Fields, Frank Richards, again, I made the announcement that Glen Farne has decided not to proceed with the ADA backstop.
Okay. And if I could ask a follow-up. So we currently have money in the operating budget for AGDC, not in the capital budget. Is that then unnecessary? Is Glen Farne also paying for AGDC costs that we currently have funded in the operating budget?
Through the chair, Representative Fields, Frank Richards, no, Glen Farne is not paying for AGDC's operating cost.
Could I ask another follow-up on this? Again, I'm just on the bottom half of this document. So at the last meeting when you all were here, we asked about milestones, which y'all did not share. Now this says Glen Farne's agreement includes a development schedule with milestones for funding feed and sales agreement. Please share some key milestones for development that you want to see and that the public would want to see.
Yep. Representative Fields through the chair, Matt Kissinger for the record. So the milestones that people should really be focused on are the feed entry milestones, the front end engineering and design, because this is the bulk of the cost. So when you enter feed, you enter into agreements with engineering, procurement, and construction contractors, EPC contractors. These are expensive agreements that cover all of the feed activity. And so these milestones will be for entering feed on the pipeline and then later entering feed on the gas treatment plant and entering feed on the liquefaction facility.
A follow-up. Could you share those milestones with the committee? Because I assume they're dates.
Representative Fields, through the chair, I believe that the actual dates on the milestones would be subject to confidentiality.
Can I ask a follow-up?
So and then we do have Representative Sadler back in queue.
Thank you. At the last committee, we asked about some definitions around low-cost energy. What's the definition of that? What's a reasonable rate of return? Are there agreements that define low-cost energy? So if Glen Farne and, I don't know, the view of AGDC, the public, the legislature is extracting excessively high rates of return, that AGDC has the ability to protect the public from what would otherwise be potentially unreasonable rates of return. What is the definition of low cost?
Yeah, Representative Fields through the chair. So there is not a set definition for low cost. In what I had mentioned, I believe, last time was I believe as I discussed the Alaska Advantage principles, it was the lowest possible cost, so not just low cost. And so lowest possible cost does have more definition around it. AGDC's role going forward, and Frank, you can probably speak to this more, but AGDC's role going forward, a lot of that will be in assessing the contracts that Glen Farne are putting together. So a lot of these would be even affiliate contracts where Glenfarne are in multiple parts of the project, and so they'd be on two sides of a negotiation, and AGDC have clear rights to oversee those.
Can I ask a follow-up? Is lowest simply recovering costs, or is lowest the lowest cost necessary in an otherwise competitive environment where capital could be deployed and earn a 15% rate of return somewhere else in the world? Like, where is it in that spectrum between zero and what an investor might want to extract in profits elsewhere?
Representative Fields, through the chair, lowest cost would take into account multiple factors around that. It's the lowest possible cost that you could get pipeline gas for, provided pipeline gas is your lowest possible source of gas. If pipeline gas is not your lowest possible source of gas, then you wouldn't move forward.
Okay. Could I get back in the queue after this?
Yeah. Representative Sadler.
Thank you. There's going to be a lot of this kind of going on as we jump. I'm interested to find out more about what Glenfarne can negotiate in as it goes through the process of doing its front-end engineering and design. We said that the final investment decision is going to be predicated on financing, on construction, on contracts, on an awful lot of stuff. So my question is this. How much authority does Glenfarne have to negotiate? Can they negotiate gas prices with the producers? Can they negotiate to include a project labor agreement? Can they assign the general contracts, the overarching contracts for construction, to certain countries or companies? And another question I'll get to is, what kind of following up on what Representative Fields said, what are the assumed rates of return that Glenfarne will require? What's a reasonable rate of return? What's the hurdle rate? Help me understand some of these things.
So, through the chair, Representative Sadler, again, Glenfarne's role will be as lead developer. So in that role, they will have the responsibility to contract with, let's say initially, the engineering, procurement, and construction contractors for the design of, in this case, phase one of the pipeline. So they will be writing that contract on H-Star Alaska paper, which they back with their finances to be able to do that. They'll also be engaged with the producers on gas sale purchases agreements for the gas coming from the North Slope, as well as gas offtake agreements with Alaska utilities and industrial users within the state of Alaska. So that's the role that they've assumed now as that lead developer role for moving H-Star forward. The second part of your question was around rates of return. I'll pass it to Matt.
Yeah, Matt Kissinger for the record. Representative Sadler through the chair. So we've made assumptions around rates of return, but the actual negotiations around those will really come as you lead into your FID. So they have to be attractive enough that you can have a final investment decision. Our modeling assumptions have been a 12% rate of return for a very well-contracted project. And so it's a fairly low-risk project in that regard.
Very good. If I'm a follow-up?
Follow-up.
Thank you. And a question we're going to hear, the history of this project and it's how we've delegated authority to negotiate it and try and make it happen are deep and long and complicated and frankly confusing. I have sensed a desire in some members of the legislature on both sides to have a second bite at the apple to second guess what Glenfarne negotiates. So for the record, to be real clear, does the legislature have the authority to approve or disapprove whatever final investment decision and contracts happen, or is that boat has that ship sailed?
So again, Representative Sadler through the chair.
Please identify yourself.
Yes, every time. Matt Kissinger for the record, Representative Sadler through the chair. Sorry, now I got.
Take your time.
No. What was the?
Has the ships hit? Do we have a?
That's right. So if the legislature decides, and this is really the most important thing coming down the road, we're spending a lot of time talking about the last 3 months, but there's very important decisions that the legislature will be intimately involved in moving forward, and these are the decisions to invest in each of the sub projects. This is the real money. So what we've done is we've got the holdco set up. And we're able to now move towards an FID. That's what we've put in place with Glenfarne. At a final investment decision, many, many other investors are going to come in. And what we've carved out is a right for the state to take a 25% equity stake in each of those final investment decisions. With that, the state would be sitting side by side with any other investors getting the same information and making the same decisions. We're talking about in an accelerated pace, and this would come with some support, not from the state government, but some support. We could have an FID on the pipeline as soon as the end of this year. I don't want to set that stake in the ground. That's, again, it's a tough one to do. We need support, but it could happen. And if it did happen, the legislature needs to be prepared for that to happen and informed to the extent, not just basically informed, but informed to the extent that you could make a decision on a $1 billion investment.
Thank you. I also want to note that we do have Adam Crum online, and we also have a representative from DNR in the room as well, which was a request before. Mr. Richards.
So, again, through the chair, Representative Sadler, Frank Richards, you asked about other decisions, whether it be through the contracts for gas sale purchase agreements or the GAF offtake agreements, whether or not the legislature would be part of those agreements. And I would say no. That's between the developer, project proponent, and the supplier as well as the offtakers. So as Matt described, the big question for the state of Alaska going forward is really going to be around that equity financing and what is the appetite for Alaska. I'll call it Alaska Inc. And what I mean by that is not only the state of Alaska through the administration and certainly as the appropriators of the Alaska legislature, but in the enabling statutes, it clearly defined a role for the Department of Revenue to be able to look for ways for Alaskans, Alaska Native corporations, Alaska businesses to participate and actually invest in this project. So that's going to be part of the discussion going forward of working together from the administration, and hopefully Commissioner Crum will be able to talk about this as well, but with the legislature and understanding how much is required to get to that equity financing value of 25%, and then what are the opportunities to be able to accomplish that if the appetite is there.
If I may?
I also have a follow-up on top of this question, but Representative Sadler.
Yeah, and I want to make it real clear to people that the legislature does not have a veto over the decision to delegate to Glen Farne the lead developer's responsibilities. That does not come back to us for approval or disapproval. That's, I want to make sure that's real clear for the record. And then secondarily, I do understand that the separate decisions as to whether to become an equity investor, the state become an equity investor in the sub-projects later on, is a decision the legislature will have decision power over because that's an appropriations function. Questions as to where that money comes from and under what terms are yet to be decided, and I hope to be at the table when they are. But please just clarify for me for the record that that ship has sailed, that decision's made, the legislature cannot go in and change that deal.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, Frank Richards, again, the legislature, the definitive agreements have been signed and by AGDC representing the state of Alaska, and I will want to reiterate that. We were created as a state corporation with this specific mission to represent all of Alaska, the state administration, the Alaska legislature, and the Alaska public.
Thank you for that, sir.
Q. You want to be in queue?
No, you had a follow-up. I can wait.
Okay. I do have a follow-up to that particular question, and I understand that that authority that we gave was, I mean, back in 2014 with SB 138. And so I think that's when the ship sailed, from my understanding. My question is kind of a follow-up to a conversation that Mr. Richards and I just had, and it was about the when the legislature decides whether or not to invest that 25% or whatever it is. You said it would be a quarter of that. If you could just describe that, and then if you could also describe the in lieu of.
Absolutely. So, again, through the chair, Frank Richards, we were talking about what does it mean in terms of the equity financing that the state of Alaska would be looking at needing, how much funding would be necessary for the state of Alaska to actually put forward to gain a 25% ownership right. And we use the example of the phase one of the project. And so, for example, we'll call it a $10 billion pipeline project. In that project, a portion of it will be debt financed and a portion of it will be equity. So that's money right up front that you need to be able to invest. The debt financing, as Matt described earlier, is we plan to use the project financing model that we've seen of great value to the LNG projects on the U.S. Gulf Coast. That industry essentially ballooned in the opportunities that has now grown the United States to being the largest exporter of LNG in the last decade. So this is where, as Matt described, the offtake agreements are signed up by the LNG developer, and then that's taken to the debt financers, who then see that those are creditworthy. The ability to for the recourse to go to those agreements as opposed to the project developer. So that is a key driver, where it's not necessarily that the state has to then go out and bond to be able to provide for debt financing. It'll all the debt finance on this project, if it's a 80-20 or 80% debt, 20% equity, or 75% debt, 25% equity, will be based on the debt will be based on this project financing model. So, for instance, on a $10 billion pipeline, at 75%, that would mean about $7.5 billion would be financed using the project finance model. The equity would then be $22.5 billion. So that's the entire project. Now, as we described earlier, we've reserved the right for the state to invest up to 25% in each of those sub-projects. So in this case, for the pipeline, it would be 25% equity of the $10 billion project, and the state's portion would be 25% of that 25%. So 25% of $2.5 billion is about $625 million. Anything to add?
Nope.
I thank you. Just want to let the record reflect we were joined by Representative Rauscher at 1:28 p.m. And just to follow up to that conversation, does that have to be cash? Can it be, I mean, can the state invest in other ways?
Chair, I don't believe that there are other ways to invest other than through the cash. Sorry, Matt Kissinger for the record. And I don't believe that there are other ways to invest other than cash, but we'd have to explore options in that regard.
Mr. Richard.
Through the chair, again, Frank Richards. What I would say is that this is part of the conversation that we feel is critically necessary for the administration as well as the legislature and AGDC to be able to move forward and look at the opportunities of what is it going to – what are the available ways for the state should it want to invest? And again, when the legislature created us, it also said that Alaska will provide the opportunity for Alaskan companies or Alaskan individuals or Alaskan Native corporations to invest. So it could be that they are part of that discussion and identification of equity that they want to participate in as well.
Okay. Representative Sadler, do you have a follow-up on this?
Yes, ma'am, to that point, actually. Well, the question, through the chair, Ms. Richards, the question you'll hear is, what other opportunities? I think if we borrow bonds, we're going to have to come up with the cash to invest in the project like any bank or financier would need to do. But a question is, where would the state have any opportunity to offer its gas in kind as a stake in any aspect of this project?
Matt Kissinger, for the record. Representative Sadler, through the chair, it would be – we'd have to explore options around that, but I think that would be quite difficult, especially with Phase 1, because remember, with Phase 1, we're just delivering gas to Alaskans, and so if the state's able to provide that in-kind gas at a low rate, it would probably benefit the Alaskans to have that.
Thank you. We are on Representative Elam.
Thank you. Appreciate you guys coming out and following up with us. I guess I have a couple of questions there. When we start talking and kind of going back to the investment side of it, my understanding is that by comparison to, say, like the TAPS project, we didn't have really the opportunity to be able to have a partial ownership. And so can you, I guess, maybe elaborate more on what it looks like to be a partner in upwards of 25% of a pipeline?
Yes. Matt Kissinger for the record, Representative Elam through the chair. That's a great question because it allows us to describe the different revenue sources from the project in total. So right now, if you remember right, we have the way we've structured this. Do we have the – yeah, that one. So we have So right now we have 25% of 8-Star Alaska LLC, what we call the top co or the hold co or number of different project co. There's a number of different things we call it. But really it's the overall project developer. We have already, from our negotiations already, from the agreements that are in place now, we in perpetuity have a 25% stake in what's called developer economics. And so this is like extra money that comes up from these sub-projects. Now, these sub-projects, at least the carbon capture and the natural gas pipeline, those will be established most likely as tolling structures, which means that you buy gas, you pay that company, because each one of those is kind of an individual company, even though it's set up as an LLC, as a series LLC. So you're paying them the toll, and then you're liquefying this gas and you're selling it overseas. Now, some of this is going to be sold in contract, and some of it's going to be sold outside of contracts. The value of the sales outside of contracts is often considered developer economics, and so that would flow through to AGDC and to the state in perpetuity. So we already have that going forward, and it can be hundreds of millions of dollars per year. It can be significant depending on how this is all structured and what LNG prices and commodity prices are, et cetera. With respect to each of the sub-projects, this 25% would then get you a stake in like those tolling economics. And so these are more like set rates of return. Like I said, we're contracting with very creditworthy counterparties, and so it's a real fixed payment, really, and you can almost count on it. And that's why the returns are fairly low. That we would have to invest to get access to. But just to be clear, that the 25% that we have right now gets us a revenue stream in perpetuity on this project.
Follow up. And that's different than what we have with, say, TAPS, for example.
It's completely different.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I thought. If I can also reference back maybe just a little farther to the timelines of kind of where we're at in the project and what that looks like in – because we're still in the feed process.
Yep.
Okay. We're at in that timeline. I saw a timeline a couple of – there we go.
There we go.
Okay. Excellent.
Actually, if I may, through the chair, Representative Elam, again, back to the point you just raised with Matt about the 8-Star Alaska Project Co. This is where we have that 25% ownership right for perpetuity in that Project Co. And so, again, that will provide revenues to the state of Alaska through AGDC. But really what I wanted to say is that our role in that Project Co., specifically during these development phases, is we are there to make sure that the developer or developers are actually meeting the guidelines and principles that we agreed to in our definitive agreements that we signed. So that is really the role of AGDC, to represent the state's interest to make sure that we are moving forward on a timeline that if we'll hopefully achieve the lowest gas price at the earliest possible time, and be able to then bring in revenues to the state of Alaska.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you. So I've got quite a line in the queue, just so you all are aware. We've got Representative Mears next, then Representative Colomb, Representative Sadler, Representative Dibert, then Representative Rauscher. So Representative Mears.
Thank you, through the chair. So I appreciate where I am in the queue here because I wanted to talk about revenue to the state. I'd asked the last time you were here about getting more details on that. So we passed out to the committee slide 12 from the president's report from September 12th, 2024. So we'll ask the committee aide if that can get up on basis. But anybody watching online, the AGDC president's report from September 12th, slide number 12. So I just got this. We've been asking and just got this after I left the floor today, so I haven't fully gotten to digest. And just a caveat, the numbers I know are in construction and engineering. They're not business development, so a lot of the terms and all this it's a complex, large project, so it takes a while to digest. It's challenging to digest it in a committee with words and not having things written out in front of us. This single graph, there's a lot of questions and there's a lot of pieces that need further explanation. So I'm asking please AGDC to have more things in writing about, you know, the different phases of the project, what our investment opportunities are, how that works, what our potential income is. So I understand that we have Commissioner Crum on the line, and prior to the meeting, I was told that he would probably be the best one to answer questions on the graph here. So Commissioner Crum, I'm sure I'm not going to be the only one that has questions on this, but I'll start with a couple. Clarity that would be helpful for me that's not noted on the graph is the difference between phase one and phase two. Like, when's the assumption that that comes? Phase one, in my mind, the greatest benefit to the state is reduced energy costs, not income to the state. So we've got royalties, an aggregate property tax, and a production tax. When it comes to the property tax, it says that it's an aggregate. Assumes full property tax does not show the share going to boroughs. Is there an estimate of how much of that property tax would be coming to the state and how much it goes to the boroughs, or is that still an aggregate at this point?
Commissioner Crum?
Can you hear me, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Yes, we can hear you.
Thank you for the record. This is Commissioner Crum. I appreciate the question, Representative Mears. Through the chair to Representative Mears, so this analysis that you're looking at was provided in March of 2023. We're working on an updated analysis. Yes, we can break down a little bit more of, we do know the information on what the projection of the property tax issue is. I apologize. Just before this hearing, I also was sent this slide that you're looking at. And so I'm trying to find out from a taxpayer confidential standpoint what we can share from a public side. And if you don't mind, I'd like to send that to you in writing on the breakdown of what those projected property tax revenues would be from this analysis.
That's fantastic. Follow-up?
Follow-up, Representative Mears?
Thank you, Commissioner Crum, through the chair. As we go further down the graph, we start to get some positive in 2032, so I assume that's once we get gas flowing from the timeline from this March 2023. But once we get into 2042, so nearly 20 years from now is when we start getting some corporate income tax. What comprises, and that's half of the income, what comprises that corporate income tax?
The corporate income tax is a combination of midstream corporate income tax as well as upstream corporate income tax. And that looking at the breakdown right now, that is as much detail as I have on that. Because, you know, this would have different players would be participating on the upstream side when it comes to producer costs of what they need to invest in order to actually flow the gas versus the development cost when it comes to the pipeline being built. I apologize to the chair. Sorry for that.
I apologize. I'm going to need to digest on that a little bit more. I have a couple more questions, if I may.
Follow-up. Yeah.
Follow-up, Commissioner Crum through the chair. One of the assumptions here is it assumes no liquids losses at Prudhoe Bay. Is that oil production or is that something else?
To the chair, to Representative Mears, the assumption on that would be both liquid losses, would be both petroleum, crude oil, as well as some condensate.
All right, just a final follow-up. Actually, just a final question. So, Commissioner Crum, we would really appreciate having a lot more detail about these numbers, especially since we're now at a phase one, phase two, what potential income there would be. And I think that there's going to be a lot of alignment in the legislature that phase one, we're looking at lower energy prices and we're looking more state income in phase two. Hopefully some of my colleagues will chime in on that. We need a lot more detail. I don't know if y'all were paying attention last week in the building, but you know, revenue is a huge concern, and what our potential income is from the state, with and without investment. That's it for now.
Back. Thank you. I'll add you back to the queue, Commissioner Crum. When you follow up with the in writing, may you please send it to house.resources@aklege.gov. We want to make sure to distribute it to the entire committee. Next in the queue, we have Representative Cologne.
Thank you, Chair. Through the chair, this is a question for Commissioner Crum as well. So, Commissioner Crum, you know, in SB 138, it says the corporation shall provide to the Commissioner of Natural Resources and the Commissioner of Revenue access to information that is related to the development of contracts. And so my questions really around your involvement in this. Can you kind of describe how you've been consulted, how much information have you received over this course of time to Glen Farm, the decision for Glen Farm, and do you have access to the contract that was signed?
To the chair, Representative Cologne, thank you very much for the question. This is Commissioner Crum. So throughout this process, one of the SB 138, as it says in law, is there has to be a consultation with the Department of Natural Resources and Department of Revenue. And as we worked through this over the last couple of months, we tried to actually define through Department of Law what that means in trying to go through legislative intent. So we did go through a consultation process where AGDC, their representatives, did meet with DNR, Law, and the Department of Revenue to actually share information about the contract negotiation that was going forward, provide us some stuff, so we were able to provide some feedback. As far as the final documents that were signed and executed, no, I've not had full access to those. But, you know, as we went through this, you know, it was determined through law that, you know, the consultation process did go forward. We did try to work through this together as best we could while trying to recognize the unique situation when it comes to confidentiality that AGDC has to do as they develop this to the market.
Follow up, Representative.
Yeah, I understand the confidentiality issues. I guess I probably pose the same questions to DNR, but as a legislator, I'm depending on you and the other commissioner with your expertise and your knowledge of things that maybe I don't have to, you know, give strong input. So do you feel like that you were given enough opportunities to give that input to the contracts and what was happening?
To the chair, Representative Cologne, I appreciate that question. I would say it took a little bit for the process to begin, and I think that there was some frustration from parties as we tried to figure out what does the consultation mean. But we were able to actually get some good information from AGDC in how the contracts were proceeding, as well as what information we could review. The timeline did move very quick as they were putting it forward, but I do think, yes, we were able to see information to put forward, you know, significant input. I think we were told that some of the items that we had brought forward were actually used as contract amendments to change some of the language that was negotiated on.
Okay, follow-up?
Follow-up, and Representative Cologne, we do have Rena Miller here with DNR.
Okay, can I just do one more question to the commissioner, and that would be great if she could come up. So that's good news. I'm glad that there was information shared that actually possibly could have altered some of the contract to make it better. Is it in your purview to say that you recommend this deal, that you feel good about the deal, that or you have hesitation, or do you have to stay neutral? What is your stance about with the contract, as much as you know of?
Thank you. With as much as we know of that, feel like, you know, there was an earnest representation of the state's interests.
Okay.
Because I, you know, haven't seen the executed documents. I can't stand us through the entire thing. I do know that we did have some meaningful engagements towards the end, and so I think there was some information there that was shared, and we were kind of all playing. What's the word I'm looking for? Prisoners of the clock on trying to make sure we move this forward. But the responsiveness when we did put forward possible changes and other concerns did seem to be addressed. And we laid out a list of items that the representative for Department of Law, as well as I believe the contract consultant that AGDC had, took into consideration.
Okay, and one more follow-up.
For clarification, did you say that you have seen or you have not seen the executed contract?
I have not seen.
Okay. Representative Cologne, follow-up.
Yeah, that was part of my follow-up. So, Commissioner, do you have the opportunity to sign an NDA and see the full contract, or are you in a position that you can't see it at all, the full contract?
That is... I'm not entirely sure right now at this point. Actually, that's a kind of a question with AGDC and Department of Law in order for them to kind of protect their commercial interests as they have in statute.
Okay. Thank you. And I'd like to invite Rena Miller to the table just to speak on DNR's position.
Hi, for the record, this is Rena Miller, DNR, Special Assistant to the Commissioner. Madam Chair, I don't believe we really have anything more to add to this conversation than what Commissioner Crum has indicated. There were multiple meetings of consultation with AGDC. Any decision points for DNR are certainly a ways into the future, and we frankly look forward to that continued engagement with AGDC as they further develop the project.
Thank you.
I do a follow-up.
Follow-up, Representative Clum.
Yeah, so through the chair, so would you say that DNR is recommending this contract, that you feel good about it, that's in the best state interest?
Representative Cologne, through the chair, DNR has not taken any best interest of the state type analysis of this contract. That's not part of our role under the legislation governing the pipeline projects.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not prepared to speak for the commissioner today as to what endorsement he may give the overall thing, but we were very, you know, satisfied with the consultation.
So follow up. Okay. So I guess I'm confused because I thought the departments, I mean, that was part of the reason why the commissioners are involved was to make sure it was in the best interest of the state. So what was DNR's role in reviewing this contract?
Representative Cologne, through the chair, I believe, according to statute, the consultation is to make sure that there is awareness and that there's an exchange of principles from both sides. Mm-hmm. That should be included, that will ultimately generate a project when these points in time come for Department of Revenue, Department of Natural Resources to make decisions related to the project, mm-hmm. that they're prepared to do so and that the projects come along in a framework that will support those.
And one more follow-up.
Representative Cologne.
And I don't know if you can answer this or not, but are you aware if the Commissioner of DNR has actually read the contract unredacted or has entered into an NDA to be able to read the contract?
Representative Cologne, through the chair, I would like to check in with the Commissioner because your question is very specific, and we'd be happy to respond to the committee in writing.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Sadler, I've got you next up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just may I express, I appreciate the discretion and deference given to members to do lots of follow-ups. It's a complex type of topics, and it's good to be able to develop answers. So thank you very much. To Mr. Richards, I guess, maybe Matt, too, I'm going to try and pick up the spare on a topic we discussed earlier about the investment, the 25% stake that 8-Star has in the entire project, and then again the 25% equity share we could at our volition take in the subprojects. My question is there any risk that the state would assume in overruns, the cost overruns from our ownership in 8-Star, and would we bear overrun costs and liabilities in ownership of whatever, you know, 10, 20, 12, whatever, 25% in the subprojects? I do a follow-up.
So, Matt Kissinger, for the record, through the chair, Representative Sadler, With our current 25% ownership of 8-Star Alaska, no, there is no exposure to cost overrun risk. The sponsors of the individual subprojects will have exposure to cost overrun risk, and they'll have to factor that into the FID decision.
Say that last again, if you would, please.
So the investors in the subprojects, so including the state, if we make a 25% investment, you will be exposed to cost overrun risk.
At that point, after the initial FID.
That's right.
The overall project, but it makes sense. That's no good.
Madam Chair, may I add something? Again, through the chair, Representative Sadler, Frank Richards. That's a key point, I think, behind your question, is that at right now, AGDC has not committed the state to any cost overrun risk. It will only be a decision that will be made in the future with an informed and hopefully well-informed legislature to be able to understand what is the risk profile of each of these sub-projects and what is the appetite of the state to take on that risk as an equity owner.
Thank you.
Hello.
Kind of new question, but my question is this. I know that in previous iterations of gas line development projects, there was some discussion with the producers about potentially having some quid pro quo, some adjustments on taxation of production of gas in the state leases. Is there any point in this process in which the state of Alaska or AGDC or Glen Farm, on behalf of AGDC, able to negotiate any deals on taxation of production taxes or any taxes, incorporating of taxes? You know, who's got the authority to do that kind of thing or not?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, again, the representatives that have that responsibility for the state of Alaska are the Department of Revenue and the Department of Natural Resources. AGDC, as a state corporation, does not have authority over taxation. You know, Glen Farm, as a private developer, has no authority over taxation. So it really falls to the responsibilities as defined under statute and constitution.
So at the point of a decision about whether to become an equity owner in subprojects, just to kind of identify the timeline there, that would be a dotted line to the Departments of Resources and Revenue to negotiate those things as we made those decisions. So that would be a side deal, essentially, which would be negotiated at that point. And that, so it could happen that the taxation of oil or gas could be an element negotiated in those equity investment decisions.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, again, Frank Richards. As you may recall, when the producers, ExxonMobil, BP, and ConocoPhillips at the time, were equity participants in the creation of the Alaska LNG project in 2014, there was that concern about taxation and the desire for the commitment for the state to essentially fix the oil taxation so that for the advancement of the project. But we're under a different development structure now. So now we have a private developer that will be buying gas at the wellhead from the producers. And so the taxation structure that is in place currently will likely still be in place, that there's not that driving force to be able to make that commitment to the producers that there be a fixed rate for perpetuity on oil or gas taxes. So that's one clarifying point. That's why this project now is vastly different than where it was.
I appreciate that. I'm just making a comment that certainly we learn new by referring to what the old we're familiar with, like TAPS or older producers' lines, and then go from that. So forgive me for asking a question that kind of predicated on that old model, but I'm glad to hear that and you answered it well. And lastly, I'll just comment, not lastly entirely, but just in this tranche, is I do see on the slide we talk about the potential for a final investment decision as early as fourth quarter of the end of this year. I would simply express my desire to caution Glen Farm and everybody that haste, as we know from our previous presentations and research, haste is the terrible enemy you invoke the risk of cost overruns the more you hurry up. So I would advise us strongly to measure twice and cut once, and don't try to meet an arbitrary timeline to please us, to please the public, that we're going to get gas fast. I'd rather get gas smart and slow than fast and wrong. So my desire.
Thank you, Representative Sadler. I've got Representative Dibert.
Thank you, through the chair. Thank you for being here, Mr. Richards, and thank you for the report. It's very helpful. It'll help me, work with my constituents in explaining this very complex project. I did have a town hall this last weekend, and I had a few questions that came up. obviously mostly regarding Fairbanks and regarding the spur line. And so I'll go ahead and start with, I have a few follow-ups. One of my questions that came up from a constituent was, do you think that the spur line, if built, there's a lot of questions about the connecting and the terminal point, and when it's built, can we have that in writing, like guaranteed that though when the project is built that this too will be built for Fairbanksons?
Through the chair to the co-chair, again, Frank Richards. So as we discussed last time and will likely be discussing with the Interior delegation tomorrow, is that there's two distinct projects, I'll call them. One is the Alaska LNG project, which is the large project with gas treatment on the slope, a mainline pipeline to a liquefaction facility. And then there's the project that AGDC was originally charged by the legislature to design, which was the Alaska Standalone Pipeline Project. The key difference is the Alaska LNG project has a location for an offtake or an interconnection point or a tie-in, to use vernacular, that will allow gas to flow to Fairbanks. And then the lateral pipeline, or a smaller diameter pipeline leading from the main line to Fairbanks, is a separate project. And that project was designed to a front-end engineering and design level to get to a Class 3 estimate, which is where we actually went out to contractors and got them to build up cost to be able to understand what the cost of that lateral was, and then finalize the cost estimate. So we had both the engineering design, we had the cost estimate, and we went through the permitting process to include the rights of way. And that's what we have as AGDC for the lateral leading into Fairbanks. So it's a distinct line from the Chattanooga interconnection point up Murphy Dome Road to what we call the city gate right there by the university. And so that's what we have as an asset for the state of Alaska and for the community of Fairbanks. As I described last time, we've entered into a memorandum of understanding with an Alaska pipeline company that wants to update that project in terms of updating the cost estimate, utilize the FEED effort and the permits to be able to advance in parallel with phase one, to be able to reach a point for final investment decision in parallel with the phase one investors. So it will be an effort to update as Glen Farm is moving forward with phase one. This Alaskan company will be updating the FEED and the cost estimates to make a final investment decision on that lateral. The interconnection point at the city gate will be someone else's, whether it be Fairbanks Natural Gas or some other utility. It'll be their responsibility to take on that effort where there's gas now available into the community of Fairbanks.
Thank you for that. And just as a follow-up, and I don't know if you know this, Mr. Richards, if this is a separate project, do you know how this company will have this project paid for, or do you know if there any part of the project is possibly paid for DOD to help build the spur, or if there's any communication? Because we have Fort Wainwright, we have Eielson, and Jay Bear, actually done by Anchorage, if that's a possibility or been thought of.
Through the chair to the co-chair, Frank Richards, the critical military installations that we have in Alaska and the need for energy and long-term, I'll call it homegrown energy, is extremely important. And so we have identified that. We've identified it to the Department of Defense. We've identified it to our congressional delegation as a key piece in the need for developing this phase one pipeline project, because the alternative is importing LNG at a higher cost, which would mean higher Department of Defense cost. But also it will mean then getting an energy source off the world market that could be interrupted depending on a world conflict. So the critical nature of having a surety of supply to the military bases is recognized, And ideally, it would be the opportunity for the military bases to work with us to be able to help underpin some of that financing through contracts. And that's that, those are conversations that we are having right now.
And one more follow-up. And you and I have had conversations about the cost of energy in Fairbanks, with 16% of downtown Fairbanks having of our income going to pay to heat our homes. And I don't know if you know the answer to this as well, but a question came up from a constituent. If there's any way, if we do get a spur line and get gas to Fairbanks, that residents and businesses will have the cost of this natural gas be equal to Anchorage, maybe possibly less, because we are closer to the, you know, the North Slope. This is a question. Thank you for the chair.
Through the chair to the co-chair, Frank Richards. The offtake, again, we are going to have to work with the Regulatory Commission of Alaska as they look to see in their role to make sure that the tariffs are in line with what the expectations are based on their statutes and regulations. So getting to that point, there will be that consideration of a state regulatory agency to make sure that the costs are allocated fairly to the communities and residents and ratepayers within those communities.
Thank you very much.
Representative Rauscher.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. So my question followed Representative from Kenai and was touched on by the representative from Anchorage, from Eagle River. So basically, back on slide 25, basically you have a timeline and it says financing 2026. Now, it also says on the bottom of the slide, the Alaska legislature may have the opportunity to invest in the phase one pipeline as early as the fourth quarter of 2025, which we've talked about earlier. I came in late. Maybe the question I'm going to ask has been already answered, and I apologize if that's true, and I apologize for coming in late. But the window sits there for a whole year. Do we have that window of affordability to decide, is my question.
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, Frank Richards, what the point identifying that the early opportunity to invest would be on an accelerated case. And again, this is where potentially we get some support from the federal government to be able to move this project forward with, again, as we just described, the needs of the military bases. So that the chart we show here with a year-long financing in 2026 is, again, an indicator of what it may be. We could, if all the stars align and the moon and the sun and the tides are all high, get to a final investment decision by the end of this year. So we wanted to just make this point that, yes, it may be sooner than we originally showed on this chart within 2026, just to be able to essentially identified to the legislature that there is going to be work that's going to be required over the summer and fall to be able to work with the administration, with AGDC and developers and as well as financiers on the opportunities for Alaska and to be able to reach a decision point on the comfort level and accepting some risk as an investor in the project. So we feel that, again, the timeline that we show here is a reasonable timeline for phase one to be able to initiate and complete FEED in 2025 and then work on financing and then to be able to start construction with potentially first gas in that 2030, 2031 timeline. However, if there is an impetus or by the administration to be able to help move this project forward, we'll take that advantage of that and move it forward more quickly.
Thank you.
Short and sweet, Representative Rauscher. Representative Mears.
Thank you through the chair, Mr. Richards. That my perfect timing, Representative Rauscher, because I was going to ask about timeline, and we'd talked in the previous meeting about, you know, maybe not 2030, 2031, but 2028. It's been in the press. It's been mentioned in other places. So that's thrown me for a loop at the moment. So I have a couple of questions, but if you could talk a little bit more about, you know, what we're looking at timeline here, since we've got a variation of 3 years over there about what are we aiming for here?
Through the chair, Representative Mears, Frank Richards. The timeline that we represent here is what we provided to the legislature is what we feel is a realistic, achievable timeline to be able to go through the process, to be able to acquire financing, because that takes time. However, based on the considerations as well as the discussions with the administration in Washington, as well as the departments within Washington, there is a key focus on Alaska LNG and advancing Alaska LNG specifically in the Phase 1 project. The reason being, as we described here, the importance of the defense installations and having energy specifically from Alaska for those. To be able to achieve that, though, it will require, again, support through existing statutes and regulations from the federal government to be able to help underpin some of the financing through contracts or through Defense Production Act on maybe acquiring some of the long lead time items and getting into the queue or the manufacturing process for, say, pipe. It's utilizing whatever tools are available within the toolkit that the federal government may be able to help provide to us to be able to accelerate the timeline. So, yes, in concept, yeah, if everything aligned and there was commitments to underpin the financing and there was ability to get those long lead items started now, we can conceivably construct the pipeline project once it starts construction in 2.5 to 3 years. Again, as we described last time, the TAPS was built in three years. Matt worked on the BTC pipeline, which was longer and through multiple countries, that was less than 3 years. So we feel that it is achievable because of the level of engineering, but also because of the Alaskan contractors that we have and their abilities to construct in Alaska.
Thank you. You touched on a couple of things that I was looking for, like the availability of piping contractors to get in the queue. I said this last meeting, I'm going to say it again. Having reality infused into the timeline is hugely important because there's other energy in the projects in the state that we've heard investors are, you know, well, if the pipeline comes, then, you know, like, what, you know, where are we with drilling in Cook Inlet for natural gas? Because if there's a lot of supply coming from the North Slope, that changes those economics. What's going to happen on timeline for developing renewable energy projects, for doing other, electricity, you know, not just heat, but, you know, what's going to happen to our electricity infrastructure and what are the potential options in there? There are huge implications to other projects outside of the pipeline. So the more reality we can have, the more details that we can have helps us not just wait for this and kick the can down the road, because the longer we wait on those projects, the more costly it is for Alaskans in many ways, and not just price. But on the timeline, we had talked about this previously, I know, but in light of potentially a more accelerated timeline, ADOT a number of years ago had identified projects that needed to be completed in order for the gas line to be built. Bridge upgrades, road upgrades, those sorts of things. Where are we with that, particularly in light of a potentially accelerated timeline?
Through the chair, Representative Mears, Frank Richards, I was one of the prime advocates at the time working with DOT for making sure that the infrastructure was going to be available and ready for this large construction project. I have not kept up with the advancement or the upgrades that have been done, so I'll need to ask DOT where they are in terms of making sure that the infrastructure is in place and ready to for this massive construction project. And one of the other considerations is we need to be able to work with DOT and their contractors that are going to be working on the major infrastructure that will be used. So you've heard us say before, we're going to utilize the Alaska Railroad for pipe haul, but that gets you up to Fairbanks. But from the Dalton, you know, from Fairbanks north, we're going to need to use the Dalton Highway and the Elliott Highway. We need to know where those construction projects are in the queue and what when they're actually going to be under construction, because you don't want Pike Hall to be having to go through construction zones. So that conversation, again, will ensue with the Department of Transportation. We have are engaged with them on what is known as a highway use agreement. So this is where the planning efforts and the look forward and the coordination between not only the projects and the design components and the bridge and weights and measures, but also for oversized vehicles and how we're going to be able to most efficiently and most cost effectively move the materials for this project.
Final through the chair to Mr. Richards. So I think that just really highlights the more pre-planning that can be done to align all these things, the less risk we have for slipping in schedule, for cost overruns, and that sort of thing. So just, again, just emphasizing how important that pre-planning is so that, you know, things are efficient. But at this time, do you have any insight to the where we would be in a queue for getting pipe, for getting contractors? Are there gaps? Are there opportunities? Or is that something that we're not going to know until FEED is done?
Through the chair, Representative Mears, I would say that as we may have described in our last conversation, we've talked to several pipe supply companies, specifically in the countries of Korea and Japan. I know that Glen Farm is now engaged with the pipeline company who is looking specifically at U.S. steel pipe rolling capabilities within the United States and how they sit in regards to the projects that they have in the queue. So it is a critical piece of information, and I would say it's currently being worked to be able to get a better understanding of what is the availability, what is the time frame for pipe delivery to the right of way.
And then just to follow up on that, through the chair, what about contractor availability? This is going to take a lot, and I imagine there's going to be potentially more than one contractor, but do you have a line of sight on local contractor availability to do the work?
Through the chair, Representative Mears, again, Frank Richards, and AGDC, as well as Glen Farm, will be meeting with the Associated General Contractors in 2 weeks to be able to talk to them and look forward about the contractors within Alaska. And I know that there are conversations ongoing with major pipeline companies outside of Alaska as well.
Thank you. Next in the queue, we've got Representative Fields, then Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair, and the LNG fact sheet, the last bullet says that after FID, AGDC will retain 25% ownership in 8 Star Alaska with the opportunity to invest in the gas treatment plant, the pipeline, and the LNG terminal. So it seems like under the agreement that AGDC has entered into, AGDC has 25% ownership up to FID, but essentially no meaningful ownership beyond that, and then the state would have to buy into it. What is the estimated value of the 75% that AGDC has granted to Glen Farm? And what is a ballpark on the anticipated value that we as the state would need to buy in for these different increments if Glen Farm chooses to pursue FID?
Representative Fields, through the chair, this is Matt Kissinger for the record. Sorry that you weren't in the room when we went through this in great detail. So what we have secured in the agreements already with Glen Farm, as you can see on this chart on slide 15, is the 25% of 8 Star Alaska LLC, the hold co, the top co at this point in time. That's in perpetuity. That doesn't end at FID. So I don't. That's just to dispel that. That's in perpetuity, and it has a revenue stream that comes with it called developer economics. So 25% of developer economics, and again, these can be hundreds of millions of dollars per year, will come to AGDC and to the state in perpetuity. That's already done. What we have secured is the right to invest in these sub-projects, each of those three sub-projects, at FID, and each of those would then have its own economics, which would normally be based, especially if you're talking about Arctic carbon capture or the Alaska Natural Gas Pipeline, on some kind of a tolling mechanism. So it would be more of a set rate of return that you'd receive based on the firm contracts on each end of those facilities.
Okay, and yeah, through the chair, sorry I had a bill up in Senate Finance, so I apologize for having to step out for a minute. Do you have an estimated value of these potential projects, what Glenfarne has been granted, what we might have to buy into for these sub-projects. Thank you.
Yeah, Representative Fields through the chair. So we have a total estimate of $44 billion for the total project.
Okay.
That's broken into $14 billion for the pipeline, phase one being 11 of that 14, and then you add the compression, and that's where you spend the extra three plus the Cook Inlet crossing. $10 billion is the Arctic Carbon Capture Facility, and $18 billion is 8-Star LNG.
Follow. So if Glenfarne failed to meet requirements to move forward with these projects, would the property rights then revert to AGDC, or under the agreement that AGDC has agreed to, would AGDC and therefore the state actually have to buy back the rights, notwithstanding that Glenfarne had failed to perform moving forward on the work in a timely manner?
Representative Fields through the chair. So you have milestones that they have to achieve, and then ultimately they have to achieve FID, or they're on the hook for diligent development efforts until they do. Under the milestones, there are clawback mechanisms. You would naturally have to pay for those clawback mechanisms. If you don't do that, if you have a free, if you penalize them on the clawback, they will not invest going into it. And so you will get a very poor work product going into FEED if you don't have a paid clawback.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Financial question. I've read in some of the slides that AGDC will be have a carried interest of 25% in 8-Star of the overall plan, not the LLC, but 8-Star overall. And my understanding of carried interest in financing is that the general partner would get a return only after a specific hurdle rate of return on investment had been made. So my question is this, my first question, is there, if profits were to bubble up to 8-Star, would those profits only be in excess of an established rate of return, or would we share in every tranche of that profit stack?
Yep. Through the chair, Representative Sadler, Matt Kissinger for the record. So think of this as more of a traditional farm-in for an upstream asset where you get carried. And in that case, it's a true carry, meaning that they are paying for all of your bills. So they're just paying for all of our bills until FID. And after that point in time, there are no more bills at the 8-Star Alaska LLC level. The bills are at the sub-project level.
Very good. Okay. I actually think that answers both my questions, so I'll defer. This event, I know.
Representative Mears.
That's fine, Representative Sadler. I've got more. through the chair, this is actually to Ms. Commissioner Crum. We were talking earlier about some analysis and report you, Department of Revenue, was working on. What's the timeline for that?
It's pretty close to being done. We've got to make sure that we go over this with AGDC and the Gov office, but I'm trying to make sure we have an updated kind of revenue analysis to inform the public. And what was taking the time was to make sure that we use this based upon the new information from having a project developer in place and current market conditions. So I'm hoping soon. I don't know the exact time frame on that, but definitely, if I can't release the entire report, I'm going to try to get portions of that to the legislature based upon the conversation that's happened today. And I apologize again, Madam Chair. Sorry, through the chair.
Thank you, Commissioner Crum. Follow up, Representative Mears.
Thank you, through the chair, to Commissioner Crum. Can you make a commitment to at least get some preliminary information to the legislature in the next couple of weeks? Because we're about to wind down on our committee time, and this is pretty important for the work that we do here.
Future Representative Mears, yes.
Thank you.
And Commissioner Crum, if we do have committee time after that analysis has been complete, we'd appreciate it if you could present to House Resources. I saw Representative Colomb, and I'm not sure if I saw Representative Sadler.
Yes.
Okay. Representative Colomb.
Thank you, Chair. So I wanted to clarify what Rep. Mears was asking. Rep. Mears, are you asking for an analysis of this revenue chart? Is that what you're asking Commissioner Crum for?
Through the chair, yes. We talked about it earlier, about getting more detailed information with the new project structure.
Okay. And Commissioner Crum, can you tell me how much money does the state get in royalties for renewable projects?
Through the chair, Representative Colum, I apologize. I don't have that off the top of my head. I'd like to get that back to you.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. You know, some of us look around, some of us have gray hair, and you may have more than the chair. What worries you about this arrangement? I don't want to ask you to be negative or punch holes in it, but I'm sure you don't feel like the ship, you know, we're launched, it's all smooth sailing from here. What aspects of this arrangement should we be concerned about? What are you concerned about, and what should we be concerned about? We've probed some of these, but I don't know if you're comfortable saying.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, Frank Richards, yes, when I started, I did not have gray hair. I would say that with any mega project, and I'm talking about the Alaska LNG project, it is as you described. We have to be judicious in our efforts. We have to be considerate. We have to take into account all the potential risks associated with developing truly a mega project for the state of Alaska. So we were given this mission by the legislature to be able to continue to advance this project as long as it is economic. And so we did our work. We had it verified by outside third parties, accredited third parties, and now we have a private developer that has done their own economics and determined that it is truly, you know, meets their economic model hurdle rates or design criteria, and so they're willing to put forward this effort. What I want to make sure of that Alaska has is the opportunity to really commercialize these North Slope resources, because they're developed every day and recycled and put back down. And so my goal ultimately is to be able to have that available for Alaskans at a cost that will be lower than we are currently paying, to be able to make sure we have an economy that we have going forward. So I think from my perspective, not having the project moving forward is one of my biggest concerns. And having it move forward to be able to make sure we have an economy and availability for our children and grandchildren in the future is really one of the key drivers that I have personally.
Okay. Another semi-philosophical question. Just to characterize this, and correct me where I'm wrong or mischaracterizing, AGDC has been given a mission and authorities, and you've implemented that legislation and taken on the mission and done the darndest you can to do it. And now you've found a partner, you have found a development partner, and to some degree we have launched out a path, and we kind of need to, you know, hold our breath a little bit until we see what happens at whether they come up with the final investment decisions. During the pendency of the FEED work, the front-end engineering design, is there anything the legislature could do or should not do that would affect the success of this FEED process?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, what I would again suggest that the legislature could do is, again, throughout the 60-member body, there are a lot of new folks in the body that may not have the experience or knowledge or working background for project development or project management. And so, and in particular, around mega projects. So I think it would be extremely valuable for the legislature to, again, have what they did in the past, which was a course put on about mega projects, and to be able to understand what this really means, what it means for the owner state to participate, what it means for developers, what it means for risk allocation and assignment and projects moving forward. That, in addition to, again, working with AGDC, looking at the opportunities that the state may want to take advantage of in terms of investment, and making sure that the information that the legislature would need to be able to make that informed decision is out there, and to be able to bring on in third-party consultants to be able to help you in making that decision. Okay. So it's a collaborative effort over the very near term to be able to make sure that what I keep referring to as Alaska Inc., which includes the legislature, the administration, and Alaskans and AGDC, are working together to be able to best understand what this project is and what the opportunities are.
And to further that, I think I hear you saying that we should all study up on this so that when it does come to the decision point as to whether and in what form and how deeply we should or should not invest in the sub-projects, we understand what we'll be getting into, become more informed consumers and partners in this process. Okay, good to know. And I found my old copy of that book. I'm going to reread it. So what is having caught the car, what does the dog do next? What is your priority coming up next with AGDC? What's your next most important task?
Through the chair, Representative Salad, our role as AGDC now is the minority owner within A-Star Alaska. As again, as we've described through the definitive agreements, we have that role to be able to assure that the project is moving forward with the Alaska Advantage principles. And so we may find those in here. That is really critical that we make sure that Alaska's needs are met, that we have Glen Farm committed to having operational presence in Alaska, that the tie-in or offtake opportunities are there for Alaska businesses and communities and resource developments are there, and that we make sure that we have that priority right for the first 500 million standard cubic feet a day that Alaska will need to be able to meet our existing power generation and home heating needs, but also expansion to other potentially new opportunities. So it's that eyes and ears oversight within what Glen Farm is doing with the project development, providing some of the expertise that we have because we've worked this project and we know we've done the feed on the project previously, bringing some of that experience to bear and being able to help them, again, work efficiently and effectively to be able to march towards a final investment decision. Mm-hmm. And ultimately recognize that the final investment decision is really going to be based on the economics of the project and ultimately the overall cost of the project. Mm-hmm. So we'll look for those efficiencies. We'll look for the ways that the project can be optimized, as we did back in 2020 when ExxonMobil and BP worked with us and looked at the project and found ways to reduce the project cost by over $6 billion. So there may be more room to be able to look at efficiencies, again, with Glen Farm as the lead developer and bringing in pipeline companies that may have a newer, better way to construct or operate this project than ExxonMobil.
Representative Sather.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Representative Mears asked the question, basically, should we be plussing up our infrastructure? I appreciate that. I almost want to ask, should we be trying to train more engineers, welders, you know, teamsters, et cetera, but you don't want to get ahead of ourselves. So that's a question that we'll come up to later. A general kind of macroeconomic global question, do we have competition or rival that is going to be competing for resources and talent or market share? Is there any project that is in direct competition, or are we just in competition with every other LNG or energy source in the whole world?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, but before I answer that question, I would like to recognize that our board members are here.
I was just about to do that.
Okay.
there are some of them out of the room. I was waiting for Representative Sadler's line of questions. But I did, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Richards. We do have AGDC Board Chair Warren Christian in the room, Vice Chair Janet Weiss, and Director and former Speaker Mike Chenault as well. So thank you all for being here in House Resources. And I apologize for not doing that sooner. It was like the next thing I was going to say.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I would possibly bring more into the table because, again, one of the aspects that we all think about is training and having make sure that the workforce or the pipeline of workers coming into the project have the skill sets necessary to work on this project. And Warren, I think, just came back from being in D.C., talking to the administration and the congressional offices, because under the Alaska Natural Gas Pipeline Act of 2004, there is provisions within that legislation that helped create the pipeline training center, but also has funds associated for training. So with the chair's indulgence, I can ask Warren to come up and give a short synopsis.
Welcome, Mr. Christian. Please put yourself on record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Warren Christian, Board Chair for Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation. I'm from North Pole. So,
Just give me a description of the training discussions you had.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler. So, in the act, There is a provision in there for $20 million to train Alaskans for the pipeline, whenever it's built. Senator Murkowski and Senator Sullivan, along with Representative Begich, we met with all of them in D.C. two weeks ago. And they all have been brought up to speed on that legislation. They're all very supportive of it. I'm a big-time supporter of training Alaskans. I mean, I'm also secretary of the Fairbanks Pipeline Training Center. That was built specifically to train Alaskans on a pipeline. So one of the things that, you know, all the unions and the contractors work together is to train Alaskans, and, you know, with a specific focus on rural Alaska, because that's where a lot of our resources will be coming from. And that training center was built just for that. It's got a camp. It's got everything on it. What it doesn't have is funds to keep to train the number of Alaskans that we need to get trained. The if you look at the projects that we have on the North Slope right now, between all the contractors, we have thousands of people on the North Slope that we were able to get trained in a short period of time to just get those pipelines done. But this is a project that you can't wait till the job starts to start training people. If you look at what we've trained up there right now, it's mostly been entry-level positions, because that's all you can train in a six-month period or a one-year period is entry-level positions. We need to train people in the more specific craft trades, and in order to do that, we need to start a lot sooner. So with that, my request, I was representing the Fairbanks Pipeline Training Center to the to the congressional delegation, was to, one, see if we can increase the number based on, you know, based on inflation and the cost, because it was a number put in a while back, and see if we can get some funds from that so that we can start training Alaskans sooner than wait till the last minute to try and do that, because that's what happened last time. When we built the pipeline, we didn't start training till after the fact, and the Trans-Alaska pipeline. But that's not going to work this time. Otherwise, we're just going to have thousands and thousands of people come in from out of state, do the jobs, and then they're all going to leave. So we need to start sooner than later.
Thank you. Representative Mears.
Madam.
Oh, may, sorry.
May I interrupt? Sorry.
I'm sorry.
But I didn't answer Representative Sadler's question. So through the chair, Representative Sadler, Frank Richards, and he was asking about competition. Mm-hmm. And so I'll take it as competition on the full Alaska LNG project, which would be not only in-state delivery of gas, but also for export. And so from export, again, what we see the world, the way that the world reacted to the Russian invasion of Ukraine was essentially, you know, curtailing the Russian LNG trade, except through various ways that they've been able to deliver it to certain countries. But that LNG potentially will be coming back on market at some point. Now, that will be, again, a new source. We're not sure what the pricing will be, whether or not they want to try and fill their coffers to make the maximum profit, or if they want to just be able to sell LNG and get back into the market. But in our conversation with the Asian LNG markets, we have been offering the Alaska LNG project kind of as an alternative to their existing Russian LNG production, to be able to make sure that they're working with a country that has, you know, our sound economic ties as well as defense compacts with their countries. In addition to Russia, you have the Middle East and the expansions, particularly in Qatar, that are, again, are moving forward and are being developed at very low cost. But again, what we have as our advantage is our proximity. And then there are, again, continuing projects that are being developed on the U.S. Gulf Coast. But, again, they have to worry about the longer shipping delay and the cost that they're seeing now in terms of energy within the United States and the lower 48. Why? Because they're seeing more energy demand from the use of data centers. And all countries are now looking for additional energy, particularly in the form of LNG, to be able to meet their future AI or artificial intelligence power needs. So that will hopefully allow us to, again, based on our closer proximity, but also based on our price structure, from a stranded asset, that we will be cost competitive and we'll sign those long-term contracts that will underpin this project.
Thank you. Representative Mears.
Thank you through the chair. My questions evolve as the conversation evolves. And Mr. Christian, since you're at the table, on the training end, the Anchorage School District in the past couple of years has been looking really heavily at the academies of Anchorage. And with our current funding situation, they're paring that back significantly. But there's a lot of opportunities for young folks to get involved in training early on. Has the Pipeline Training Center been working with the academies of Anchorage at all and having collaboration of what should be involved in those programs, being able to help provide trainers, or do you have any relationship with that Anchorage School District?
Through the chair, Representative Mears. Yes, the Fairbanks Pipeline Training Center reaches out to a lot of the training centers throughout Alaska, but reaches out through all Alaska to try and all the high schools. So I wish Amy Schumacher was here. She is the new director for the Fairbanks Pipeline Training Center, and she could answer all your questions in great detail. But she's been an excellent addition to the training center. Her outreach to other centers and the rural Alaska has been excellent. The one thing is if we do build a pipeline, you know, the Fairbanks Pipeline Training Center is not the only pipeline training center. We're going to need, I believe there's 11 or 12 regional training centers throughout the state, and we're going to need every single training center in order to train all the Alaskans. So to get this job done, you just can't run them all through one training center.
Follow up.
Thank you, through the chair. I would love to learn more about them. I know that in East Anchorage, the Carpenters Union is building a hall, so there's other opportunity. Oh, I guess it's a training center to provide more opportunities. So that's definitely something I'd like to learn more about. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Fields.
Thank you, through the chair. Thanks, Mr. Christian, for your longtime work in developing the workforce. And just following up on Representative Mears' question, I know Representative Mears that the building trade unions have been working with the Anchorage School District's efforts to build workforce. State underfunding of education basically means that the academies of Anchorage is substantially on hold and will remain on hold until, unless we fund schools adequately, there's no path to do that right now. The 700 BSA adopted in Senate Finance won't do that. So I guess I just want to put on Mr. Christian's radar He knows, obviously, the trades really well. If we wanted to substantially enlarge the pipeline of students entering the building trades through the Anchorage School District, where we currently supply maybe 2% of what the Anchorage School District could be supplying, essentially a business partner would have to go to the Anchorage School District and say, we are funding the marginal incremental cost of implementing the academies of Anchorage for pre-apprenticeship for the respective trades, which would then enter the training facilities of the respective unions and then go on to do training at the Fairbanks Pipeline Training Center. So it probably wouldn't be director entered to FPTC. It would be through the respective unions and then to FPTC. But that would, we just don't have the resources right now to implement academies of Anchorage, unfortunately.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. I just observed that the academies of Anchorage model, I think they got a $25 million federal grant and went ahead with the program without identifying a future funding source. And we're relying on industry and someone else to come up with the money to pay for it. So they basically kind of chopped craps, and the absence of progress is not necessarily due to any legislative action or inaction. Thank you.
Representative Klum.
Thank you, Chair. Through the chair, I was just going to ask Mr. Christian, the $20 million you were talking about, are you saying, it sounded like you said there was $20 million there for training, but you said that there wasn't. Are you talking about originally there was $20 million for training and now there's not, and you're asking the feds for help with that? Just clarification on that.
Through the chair, Representative Cologne, there's $20 million in the legislation. It has not been appropriated.
Oh, okay.
So it still needs to be appropriated from the legislature.
Okay.
Congress, yes, sorry.
Oh, from Congress.
Congress. This is federal legislation.
Federal. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Are there any further questions? Representative Sadler.
Well, as an old newspaper reporter, it was always the last question. Was, what were we not smart enough to ask that you want us to know?
It's
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, that's kind of a loaded question.
It sure is.
We talked, you asked specifically about the timelines. You talked about the risks going forward. You wanted to know legislature's role going forward. You asked about AGDC and what role AGDC has going forward. So I think that the list of questions was very comprehensive. The conversation that we've had both within this committee and with the legislative budget and audit are addressing, again, a lot of the questions that I think we've heard elsewhere in the building. So thank you for asking those questions. I don't have another question of you to ask.
Thank you. And then closing comment, Representative Dibert, if you.
I'll just do a closing comment, I guess, not really a question, Mr. Richards. And also thank you, Mr. Christensen, for your work being an educator and preparing our youth to get jobs in these positions is very important to me. And I know Mr. Richards and I have had conversations about funding our schools who have welding programs. And those schools, those classrooms are very full. They want to bring in more of these classes so that youth could get into these courses before they go into apprenticeship. So thank you for your work in that. And I guess my final comment, I'm looking at in the questionnaire, thank you again so much. What are the next steps for Alaska LNG? And I like that last box. I know there's three check marks. It's on page 2 out of 3. The construction and operation, delivering gas to Alaskans first, and then adding exports. I like that line. And from what I understand is that the construction of a pipeline for exporting might include more money to build a bigger pipeline maybe for exporting. I'm not quite sure. So I'm not sure about that. It might pencil out costing more to build an exporting pipeline. But our job as legislators is to prioritize Alaskans first, to make sure that Alaskans come first. And I just wanted to state that on the record. And if I could put a plug in for Fairbanks again, make sure that they are included as well. And, you know, we need to take care of Alaskans and make sure that spur line gets built. And I think that is it. Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Dibert, Frank Richards, again, I just want to clarify one thing that you just said. When we talk about the Alaska LNG pipeline, we're talking about a 42-inch diameter pipeline. And the first phase of that will be building that pipeline without compressor stations, meaning the gas would flow from the North Slope to Alaskans. And then the second phase of that would be adding compression stations as well as building the pipeline under Cook Inlet to be able to deliver gas to the liquefaction facility. But it's the same diameter pipeline. So that's one of the key points. It's the same diameter pipeline. So we're overbuilding initially for Alaska's needs, but that's what we have permitted. And ultimately, with that project built, we then have the ability then to push more molecules down that pipeline for export, and then the revenue and the lower costs come to Alaskans.
Thank you, Mr. Richards, through the chair. I need to hear this like 50 times. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as a bit of the devil's advocate or just kind of giving voice to some of the comments I'm right here in the public, there are those who say this whole pipeline thing's a pipe dream. It's terrible. You know, they're just going to wait for the ice to melt in the Northwest Passage. They're going to tanker it out in floating LNG tankers. How would you respond to people that say that's that make those comments?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I would say that, again, we're looking at long-term contracts falling off to our utilities as early as 2028. And so Alaska needs gas. And so I don't see any of the ice models predicting that we're going to have open water windows for year-round opportunities to deliver gas from the North Slope via ship. And so the opportunity for Alaska through delivery of the North Slope resources, in my estimation, is a pipeline. Otherwise, you'll have Fairbanks and our interior cities being reliant on trucked LNG because they're not going to be able to get ship gas due to Arctic melting, or other resource developments along the pipeline route that may want access to the gas and have lower cost of energy. So that's why we've continued to be an advocate for the pipeline, as was the mission statement given to us by the legislature.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Representative Sadler, and thank you, Mr. Richards. I've, you know, consistently said as long as Alaska is reliant on oil and gas, it should come from the North Slope, and just want to reiterate a comment that I made earlier to you when we were meeting separately. Just, you know, when we say Alaskans first, and we're talking about natural gas coming from the North Slope or LNG coming from the North Slope, I just want to make sure that the other communities on the North Slope aren't left behind. We're connected in two communities, but and that, you know, that speaks to, you know, I look forward to seeing how it impacts all of rural Alaska and lower energy costs. So thank you so much, Mr. Richards, for being here. Thank you, Mr. Christian, to the board members, Director, former Speaker Chenault, Mr. Kissinger, Janet, we thank you so much all for being here, as well as Rena Miller from DNR and Adam Crum, Commissioner Crum from the Department of Revenue. That completes the agenda for House Resources Committee meeting today. Thank you again to our presenters. Our next House Resources meeting is Friday, April 25th at 1 p.m., where we will hold confirmation hearings for the governor's appointees to the Board of Fisheries, the Board of Game, and the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission. The time is 2:48 p.m., and this hearing of House Resources Committee is now adjourned.